Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the best horror movies ever and then talk about them. My name is Luke Condo with Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, a Mr.
Ben Errington.
How's it going, man? You alright?
Good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. We need to get right in there with the coolest thing that's happened in a little while was the demo to Resident Evil 2.
The coolest thing that's happened in a little while,
This year, I think, at least.
This year so far, we're 2 weeks in, and this is the coolest thing that's happened, yeah.
I think so. I was quite excited to get home and stick it on.
Yeah, me too. And, like, it took so long to download. Like, I don't know if it was my internet was playing up or what, but it was just really, really teasing me. It was like, oh, we're going to have to wait a little while, mate.
So, how long did it take to download? From you? Did you sit in front of the TV and just wait?
No. Because it was like 7 or 8 gigs, so it took, like, over an hour.
I don't think it took that long for me. Maybe it did, but we just did other things to pass the time. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Sped by. So you're a big Resident Evil 2 fan anyway.
Yeah.
Did it live up to your expectations?
Definitely. I've kind of like watched so many videos on it that I kind of knew what I was going to expect anyway.
Yeah.
Knew what to expect. But I think once I was actually in it, like the atmosphere is just like unbelievable, and the game mechanics, like the gore and everything, is just ridiculous, really, isn't it?
Yeah, the whole thing where you're walking through the dark alleyways or the dark rooms, corridors, and you've got the torch, and everything seems kind of difficult to control a little bit, and it's a little bit, you can't quite see everything. It does work, and the noises.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully I'm going to get used to it, but like I really struggled with a lot of things, like the aiming and the turning around and getting lost where I was facing, all that stuff. I mean, I'm going to get used to that, I know, because the over-the-shoulder thing, I'm familiar with it. But, yeah, I don't know if it's just because I was excited and also terrified, but...
Maybe. I mean, so it's the same. It feels very similar to Resident Evil 7. Like, even the aiming, I remember the aiming being a little bit difficult in Resident Evil 7.
Yeah. Everything, like all the menu systems and stuff are very Resident Evil, like sound effects, the little tick-tick-tick.
Yeah.
That stuff.
I'll tell you what, I do... So how do you feel like this compares to being in first person?
I think if it was in first person, it wouldn't change all that much about it. I think they just kept it third person to keep it more like in keeping with the original. I think if it came out as first person, I think a lot of people would probably say, oh, no.
Changed it too much.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind. It'd be nice to have the option.
Yeah. But I do feel like when you're in, especially Resi 7, like the parts where things jump right into your face, or like when you miss it in the first hour, your missus is constantly jumping right into your face, and like there's bits where she's like soaring. I don't want to spoil anything. She's like taking parts of your body off. It feels like it's happening to you, like it's a real sort of visceral personal experience.
Yeah,
but here it's like it's not you. It's Leon.
It's Leon. Well, I guess because he's such a strong character in the in the Resident Evil canon, it's a bit difficult to sort of have that first person thing without him being on screen. I think it would take away a lot from that.
And Ethan in Resident Evil 7 is like a non-character. Like he didn't, you don't really know who he is.
Yeah, I know. Like the faceless protagonist, really, isn't it? Yeah, but I thought it was great. I mean, I was lucky that I finished it because I think I was kind of rushing around. I think this is a weird thing because it was only 30, it was a 30 minute deadline on it. I kind of felt like I needed to rush around.
Yeah.
Whereas usually if I was playing that game, I'd be a lot more slow, methodical, looking at everything, reading everything.
Yeah.
You know, conserving ammo.
That creeps you out more when you're not, when you sort of taking your time to go around every corner, that creeps you out a lot more than when you're running around like a lunatic.
But at the same time, I think I needed to run away on certain bits because, you know, the sound effects were just, I could hear everything was like around me. It was, really couldn't work out what was going on.
Yeah, it's good, man. I'm looking forward to playing the full game. I think I might even get the remake to Resi 1 first because I've never played that.
Yeah, remake to Resi 1. Resident Evil 0 on PlayStation 4 is a good shout as well. It's only 2 weeks, 10 days now until it comes out, so I'm not probably going to have a chance to play loads of stuff, but I would like to give myself one run through of the original Resident Evil 2.
Yeah. Do you know it well enough now to like speed through it?
What Resident Evil 2?
Yeah, the original.
Yeah, I think so. I probably know Leon's scenario better than Claire's, but then I might go and do Claire's scenario just because I haven't done it as much.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. It should be fun.
It's cool, man. And also you did a little video, so if people want to see you screaming and playing games.
So on the Hawk and Cleaver YouTube channel, just do a few gaming videos now and then, and this is one of them. So I played the Resident Evil 2 one shot demo. So obviously it was a bit difficult, like playing it for the first time as well, and recording myself play it. There's part of me thinking, if I mess this up, I am finished.
Yeah, extra pressure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I did end up on danger as well at one point when I was bitten.
Near the start. It was like 5 minutes in at most.
Yeah, it's awful, isn't it? I mean, my aiming, I think the first zombie I took on, I think I fired 6 times and missed 5. Yeah. It was really, really bad.
Well, they do kind of like this weird head bobbing.
Yeah, they do a bit of a... Yeah, they come towards you like that, don't they? And I was a bit like, I mean, I think I had too many layers on as well because I was sweating, like my palms were sweaty, and my heart was thudding.
Yeah.
It's just one of those, I mean, I love Resident Evil games, but it's one of those things that always gets under my skin. And I'm not like that with all horror games. There's something about the Resident Evil atmosphere that kind of really, really gets to me. But excited for the full game. So
yeah, man. So other than that, have you done any other horror stuff that you want to talk about?
I don't think so. I don't think I've watched or read anything horror related apart from Resident Evil 2. I watched a couple of films, but no horror. How about you?
So I watched a documentary called King Cohen, which is about the sort of exploitation filmmaker Larry Cohen. He made The Stuff in the 80s, Cue the Winged Serpent, loads of stuff. He's the kind of guy who would make all this stuff with no budget, and he wouldn't sort of get the correct permit for stuff, so he'd just tell, you know, in St. Paddy's Day there's a big parade in New York. He put Andy Kaufman in a police costume in the middle of that parade and they just filmed it. And then there was someone, sort of like an assassination within that. He had no cares about whether people would be scared or anything. He just used that as extra production value for the film. Now, that's really interesting. I've not seen much of Larry Cohen's work before. So just watching the documentary has been like it's really primed me up to go out and watch some of his stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, no, I think Black Swan was about it, really.
I was also going to mention the trailer for the Shudder exclusive documentary, Horror Noir.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, sort of like blaxploitation and also just black representation in horror cinema. So it talks of a lot of sort of like horror veterans and sort of new up and coming guys like Jordan Peele, Tony Todd, Candyman, and everything like that. And that's premiering, I think, early February. On Shudder. Well, I haven't actually got a Shudder.
You can just get the trial. Just give it a go. It's like 7 days for free.
I think I might do that. From the trailer, it looked pretty cool. Like the evolution of how black people are represented in horror, sort of when they go from being like the sort of antagonist in early things, and then you know the person who dies first in slasher movies, and And I guess like blaxploitation things, sort of like the sort of spoof 70s horrors and stuff like that. So yeah, it looks like an interesting watch. Trailer's on YouTube now.
Yeah, I'll check that out. I thought I'd
give that a little shout out.
But other than that, so I guess it's just on with the list, on with the IGN list.
Yes.
We are on number 98, and today's film we're talking about is Black Swan. Have you got some more information about it other than...
I have, mate. I have, don't you worry about it.
Cool.
So Black Swan is a 2010 American psychological horror film directed by Darren Aronofsky. Film stars Natalie Portman, Vincent Cassell, Mila Kunis, and Winona Ryder. A committed dancer wins the lead role in a production of Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake, only to find herself struggling to maintain her sanity.
So this is what IGN had said. This is William Bibiani. One of the great tragedies of art is that the level of introspection necessary to make something beautiful is inversely proportional to the amount of socializing you have to do to get anyone to notice it. That unfortunate contradiction is at the heart of Black Swan, in which Oscar winner Natalie Portman plays a ballerina whose obsession pushes her to greatness, but away from other human experiences and eventually into madness. Darren Aronofsky films Black Swan like a subtle character piece, eventually letting his horrifying tale bloom into a kaleidoscope of self-destruction. The madness is real, for it is what our protagonist believes, and skillful filmmaking and exceptional performances make us believe it too. It's got 85% of Rotten Tomatoes, and it's 8 out of 10 on IMDb. I thought it was going to be higher than that on Rotten Tomatoes. I kind of thought it would be low 90s.
Yeah, it does seem like that kind of film, doesn't it? As far as I remember, it was critically acclaimed across the board, was it not? I know. So Natalie Portman won Best Actress at the Academy Awards for this, and I think it was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Cinematography, but didn't win.
Okay.
So, like, it was a bit of an awards darling, wasn't it, when it came out?
Yeah. I mean, so how do you feel? Are you an Aronofsky fan?
Oh, yeah, massively. Even some films which I think are still like quite difficult to watch. Like I admire them in a way.
Yeah.
Probably my favorite is The Fountain, which is
probably that's the only one I've not seen.
It's probably the most difficult one to watch in terms of narrative. I haven't seen it for a number of years, but that's probably my favorite. Quite closely followed by The Wrestler, because I think he's good at these sort of like character pieces, and sort of exploring these broken or people who are breaking down and specialize in something, which I guess he does a lot, doesn't he?
I feel like Aronofsky makes two types of films. There's the sort of psychological breakdown character pieces, which are my sort of favorite sort of idea of what he does, and then he does the sort of more biblical white bigger sort of like Noah in The Fountain. And I feel like Mother...
So I haven't seen Noah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's all right. I mean, it's I'm not as big a fan of that side of his filmmaking, but Mother I felt like was the sort of bridging between those two styles that he does. But man, so Requiem for a Dream,
oh yeah,
is one of my all-time favorite films. Like, and I've seen it so many times. I did an essay on it at university, and it sort of made me realize all the filmmaking sort of skills and stuff that went into making it. I still think it's one of my handshake movies. So, you know, if you'd like to let someone know who you are as a person, or like what kind of character you are, I'd say Requiem for a Dream is up there. Just because I just love everything about it. But I would say, I do feel like Black Swan, after watching it again now, I do feel like Black Swan is a much more mature, all-round, better-made film. But I would still watch Requiem for a Dream over it.
Yeah, I do like Requiem for a Dream. Again, another film that I haven't seen in a number of years, so probably would be good to go back to. I completely forgot about Mother for a second, but I really liked it.
Yeah.
I mean, it was utterly mad.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really liked it. I mean, out of all of his films, The Wrestler is probably his least mad, right?
Yes, is that like the only one where nothing trippy happens?
I think it's the only, I mean, he's obviously, this is about a spiraling, but it's not really about his mental state. Somewhere maybe it is. I don't know. But yeah, The Fountain, I think a lot of Aronofsky's work, early stuff anyway, I've always found the music to be something that's really sort of resonated with me. He works with a composer called Clint Mansell.
Yeah. Did he?
So he did Requiem.
Okay, yeah.
He did Requiem for a Dream.
Did he do Pi, that, you know, his very first film? Or that's all drum and bassy.
I'm not sure, actually.
I don't know.
Composer, Clint Mansell. Yeah, he did.
Okay, so right from the start then.
Yeah, so, I mean, did he do the soundtrack for this?
Yeah, well, he did. Yes, I mean, it's, you know, it's the classic piece all the way through, but I think arranged with some extra digital bits by Clint Mansell. Yeah, it's good, man. So, I mean, I don't know how anyone could watch this and not come away with a better appreciation of ballet. Like, no one's watching this and go, nah, it's ballet's a piece of shit, isn't it? It's easy. Like,
come away and go, I'm gonna get into ballet. I am. No, Ben, it's just because you watch Black Swan. No.
You're like
Black
flying Black across Black. The room.
Yeah. I mean, your feet go through some shit, don't they?
Yeah.
That's all I kept thinking. No wonder she's losing it, old Natalie Portman.
The toes are in pain. Here's some ibuprofen.
I can't believe this film is almost 10 years old as well.
So yeah, so it's 8 years old, and she has a flip phone, and I was like, that looks ancient. A flip phone now. Like,
that looks ancient, babe.
It just looks so old. I don't know why. The rest of the film feels kind of contemporary, but that phone, it's like, I'd say 15 years old.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, exactly. This doesn't seem like the kind of, it doesn't, no, exactly. If I watch this film and someone said this film came out last year, I would be like, yeah, fine. But as soon as that flip phone comes out, I'm like, hang on a minute.
You ain't getting me. Yeah, man. So also, like, Natalie Portman, I mean, I've got a new appreciation for Natalie Portman, because when I look at this film and, like, you see all the different ranges of characters she does, and, like, she does a whole doppelganger thing where she's kind of playing two characters at the same time, and she does the whole ballet thing on top of it all. It's difficult to watch this and not feel like, oh man, she is maybe one of the best actresses, like, in the world. Like, she is insanely good.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. She's great. And also,
she won the Oscar for this, right? I think that was the...
Yeah. That's true. Mila Kunis is good in it as well. This isn't the kind of film that she'd usually be in. I couldn't work out another film that is similar to this in any way.
Jupiter's Ascending.
I've not seen that.
I don't think it is like that.
No. Yeah, so she's good. I mean, Vincent Cassel is just kind of doing him, isn't he, really?
I don't know if that's kind to say that he's playing like a smarmy pervert. Just doing a bit of Vincent Cassel.
All right then. Not by doing him, but I mean, it feels kind of effortless. It kind of feels like he did
slip into it suspiciously easy. You are right.
He did. He slipped into something suspiciously easily.
Yeah. Specifically easy as well.
Specifically easily. Yes.
Barbara Hershey plays her mother. It says here in the credits, she's credited as the queen as well. So. Are they just saying that as a sort of casual thing, or is she actually on stage? I didn't notice it.
I don't know. No. Well, did you mean her mum, did you say?
Or... Yeah.
No, I'm not sure. No. And obviously, Winona Ryder as well as the aging former ballet star who's like leaving the production. I completely forgot she was in this.
Yeah, I remember her being in it, because I think I'm never going to forget the stabbing with the nail file scene.
But, Sebastian Stan makes a little brief thing.
Yeah, when Soldier's in there. Yeah, playing it cool.
I was a bit like, hello, we'll wait there a minute.
Yeah, I thought he was English. Is he not English? Maybe not.
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't think he is, actually.
I just kind of figured all of the Marvel superhero actors are potential. There's a 50% chance they're going to be English. Most of them are.
He's Romanian American. Apparently.
Same thing, isn't it? Summit foreign.
Summit foreign.
Yeah.
Well.
So the film opens up with a pitch perfect ballet move. I don't know what the move's called.
Yeah.
Some spins.
Some spins, some jumps, some like wings stuff. Their heads are all up, like a little very, very bird like, obviously, Swan Lake and all that.
Yeah.
There is like a freaky, creepy black swan beastie
Yeah.
Knocking about. Is that actually in the show or is that in Nina's mind?
I mean, all this is like part of a dream, isn't it, in the first bit? But she's like doing it, she's all perfect, and then she wakes up and she goes, like, that's what I wanted to do. It needs to be absolutely perfect.
Basically, if you dream it, then
it's a secret.
It will come true.
Yeah.
Just have to dream it. It will come. Yeah. So sometimes, like, if I dream something that I've done, I think, oh, yeah, I don't need to do that now in real life because I've dreamt it.
Don't you think it's really bad when you dream that you've gotten out of bed and got ready for work and then you wake up? Oh, for fuck's sake.
I don't think I have ever dreamt that before. I had a, really, really boring. I dreamt once that, like, my bread was out of date. So I went and got some new bread. Oh, no. And then the next morning, I was like, oh, yeah, it's all right. I got that new bread. No, I didn't. Just dreamt it. Bread was still out of date.
I've never had that.
Awful.
No, did you try and make something with it? And then you're like, dreams. You were angry at dreams.
Dreams!
Freddy Krueger.
Opened the front door and shouted dreams out of the front door. Yeah. People just went, someone walked past and nodded, like, knowingly.
Yeah.
I've been there, mate.
Did he say bread?
He went, not a stale bread. What happens?
Yeah,
and I went like that, and then I realized I was completely nude, and then I woke up again. Oh, double
Jesus
wake
Christ!
Up.
You never know. You never know when you're gonna wake up. Okay, so she's dreaming this, and then she wakes up. And she's eating like a nonsense breakfast, like a tiny breakfast. And her mum's she's living with her mum in a
it's like half a grapefruit and a poached egg.
Yeah.
A nonsense breakfast. So if I served that to you, if you were staying at my house and I went, look, Luke, I ain't got a lot in the house.
I flipped the table.
But here's half a grapefruit and a poached egg.
You'd be going to pick up your own from the side and you just see this half of the grapefruit fly and like stick to the cupboard.
I go, waste not,
want not. And then you turn to say that and then the poached egg would just hit you in the face at the right time.
And a perfect yolk would just dribble down my face. And I'd be like, see how good that yolk was?
Nailed it, yeah. So she's got an audition. She's living with her mum in like this apartment that's like really small. It's more of like a prison. We get the impression straight away that her mum and her relationship isn't quite right. I don't know if you've seen her mum's paintings yet, but her mum's an old ballerina who now paints really bad.
She's living her life vicariously through Nina in a way where she wants her to be successful in a way that she obviously wasn't, because she says at one point that she gave up her career.
Well, I don't know. It kind of feels like she wants her to be successful, but also doesn't want her to be successful because she doesn't want her to win. There's also like a weird competitive thing.
Make your fucking mind up, innit? I really want you to be successful, but I really also don't want you to be successful.
I want you to be exactly the same successful as me. And then we can be sisters.
then we can be miserable together and eat these half grapefruits.
And also nowadays she paints these, I don't know how much it adds to the story, but she paints these like terrible portraits. But that happens. And then she goes to, she's got the auditions for the Swan Lake, which I believe this film pretty much follow. I don't know the story of Swan Lake, but if it follows this story, then we kind of do. Right.
Maybe we need to go to the ballet just to think I might work it out. Maybe the next episode of Horror Hangout needs to just be us at the ballet.
Yeah, ballet hangout. I like it.
Ballet hangout.
So she does the audition and she's rate good, like spot on. Everyone's like, that's top.
She's very swanny. They go, that was quality.
When she does the wings, like you see all the muscles and sinew in her back moving around like a bird, and it's like, ooh. Spot on.
It was
a lot of that sort of noise as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you just be listening and just hear someone will say something, and you just hear like a pigeon.
Like a pigeon fly off.
Yeah, constantly.
Did you have like a scorecard counting all the bird references?
I didn't. But why was there any sort of like puns and stuff?
I don't know. I was just asking you.
Like a Malcolm and Wise sort of.
Birds of a feather flock together.
No, I didn't. I need to watch it again just to make sure. I didn't peck up on any puns. Ooh.
There we go.
So Vincent Cassell, he's like, he's like suavely walks in.
He's like an artistic director. He's like a
Petit Le Pew in a suit. Yeah.
He's like a sweater around the neck tied.
Yeah, that's the one.
Type of twat. It turns up and just says, like, he says to didn't he say, so Nina gives her audition. He says it was like a flawless as the white swan, but as the black swan, you're shit.
You're too white for this role. So like a political message in here. He's smiling around. I think he picks some other people, but then she isn't happy, right? She goes to see him in his office.
Yeah, I think she wants him to reconsider that she get the role, because I guess from the day before, she kind of understands that even though she's good at the white swan, she's not good enough as the black swan. So essentially, she's not going to be picked. So she's going to be in the performance in some capacity, but possibly not as the white swan.
The tree, sort of in the background.
There's another girl. the tree. There's another girl who's kind of like a rival. They exchange sort of like quite steely looks from across the ballet
hall.
Yeah, a few times. We don't really get much of this girl or this girl's character, apart from that they're clearly like rivals and they don't really like each other, I guess. But then they never really speak to each other. They never sort of go over and go, "You're right," and then they turn out they love it. They'll love each other. They got loads in common.
I get the impression that Natalie Portman doesn't want to speak to anyone. Like, she's so hyper focused on the art form.
She's a bit of a. Yeah. She's a bit of a loner.
Yeah.
She doesn't seem like the kind of person who's got that many friends. I mean, sure, she might have. She might have over 100 friends on Facebook.
Yeah. She might be a brand captain, whatever they call them, on Instagram. Influencer.
She might be an influencer. Yeah. Hashtag ad.
Yeah. So she goes back to see him in his office, and now she's wearing lipstick. We get the impression that she's like never done anything naughty, like in her life, and this is her trying to do something a little bit naughty. But he smooches her on the lips, and then she nips him.
But initially, like, sees right through it. He basically says, like, "Oh, why have you come here to talk to me about it? Done up like a right treasure." Or he says something like that along the lines of that.
Yeah.
"Why try and come here dressed up?" What does he say? I can't remember what he says. He basically says, "Tart. You're a slag!
You tat." Well, I think, I get the impression that he's not actually sort of, it's not about him being sort of sexually perverted or anything, although he is kind of that way, lecherous and whatever. I feel like it's just he is also dedicated to the art form and is trying to use that to use the sexuality to sort of force and, you know, maneuver.
Yeah. In a way, he is trying to manipulate people a little bit into performing these roles in the production. By being a bit of a perv, but you know, that's what he'd say if he got done.
Yeah,
that is his excuse.
Yeah.
But so she kisses him, but he bites her.
She bites her. Him.
She bites him.
They start pecking.
Have a little bite, and then she leaves. And I think then she assumes that she's definitely not going to be the white swan. And then a cast list goes up, and there's a bit of a weird exchange where she and the girl who was her rival, she says congratulations to her.
Yeah.
Doesn't she? Congratulations.
Preemptive. Yeah.
But then the girl goes and looks, and turns out Nina is the white swan, the lead. And obviously the girl says, what was that, some sort of sick joke? You bitch!
I think she says, get fucked. I think she says something along those lines.
Go fuck yourself, you bastard!
That's exactly what she says.
That was re bad what you did, you bitch!
Yeah. And she just talking to herself as she grumbles off and leaves Nina alone. So from here on out, like, basically Nina's got the role, but we get the impression that she isn't really very good at it, or like she's not really doing it properly. So the pressure's now starting to pile on her.
Mounting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So her mum gets her like a cake to celebrate, and she's a bit like, cut me a sliver. And then she starts cutting a big chunk. She's like, that's too much. And her mum reacts like any normal person does. Goes, well, I'll sling the whole lot in the bin then, you prick.
Yeah. She's also from, like, the countryside of England somewhere.
Yeah.
Most of them are in this.
So, yeah, we're starting to see, like, the sort of tensions between her and her mother as well at this stage, which obviously isn't helping. It is kind of making everything worse. I feel like anytime anything bad happens in this, her mum's always, like, banging on a door saying, what are you doing in there?
She gets no privacy, does she? So, like, her mother washes her, does her nails, does everything for Nina. And also, like, she can't close the door. Like, it seems like Does her mum sleep in the same bed or something with it? Or like, does she just sleep on the chair?
There's a part where Nina wakes up and starts giving herself a treat. Gives herself a Scooby snack. Yeah, because she has a weird exchange with Thomas Leroy earlier. It says, like, for your homework tonight, I want you to play with yourself. He wants her to embrace that side of her sexuality.
Can you imagine if your teacher at secondary school was like, your homework tonight is to go and pleasure yourself?
What else would I be doing?
Everyone would be like, getting A's. A pluses.
A's. Well, if that was all you had to do. Did you have a wank last night? Yep.
A plus. Yeah, and he taps you on that, and he taps you sort of at a distance, sort of taps. Well done.
Oh, I've had a shower since. Don't you worry. Yeah. So it's weird. So Nina wakes up and she starts, you know, masturbating, and then as she's getting right into it, where she turns over, almost like dry humping her pillow. She turns and sees her mum just asleep in the chair.
Embarrassing.
Awkward. She goes, fuck!
Yeah. I mean, that could be a scene from a comedy film. Like
a
raunchy, old school or something. And then she sneaks out and then sees Vincent Cassava's dick in a pie.
Yeah. Or it's one of those moments where, like, she's making loads of noise and then she realizes that she's been, the baby monitor's been on this whole time, and then she goes in, all family's there.
Yeah. So what happens next? So
there's a gala next, which celebrates the new season, the new cast, and then there's Out with the Old. So the character played by Winona Ryder called Beth is there getting tanked right up, slinging them back, and then she gets a bit aggressive. Like, she's obviously annoyed at Nina for being the new young upstart who's kind of taking her place. In this, so they have a few.
There's a lot of themes. A lot of things in this film, like someone taking your place or you taking their place and that kind of thing. At this point, Mila Kunis is in it as well. She's at the party. She follows Nina into the toilets at this party, and then she goes, "Hey, up, mate!" And then she just takes her pants off and puts pants in a bag. Yeah. And then nothing. I'm like, why did she take her pants off? Is she sharted or something?
Probably. What else are you gonna do in that situation? Obviously, just probably take your pants. Take my pants off and discard them.
No wonder they have those clutch bags. Anyway, seal tight, airtight.
Excuse me, can you pay for the taxi? No, but you got a bag right there.
Change. It. Yeah, you've not got tuppence in there, have you?
That's the fit. As I said, you wouldn't keep the pants if you sharted. You discard them.
Raunchy comedy film.
Maybe Black Swan is a raunchy comedy film.
You just need some laugh tracks.
Just need some laugh tracks or some, like.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If it's like a comedy film from the late 90s or early 2000s.
You're thinking like pop punk
We need segues and stuff. We need some Blink-182.
Yeah.
Sum 41, all that stuff happening especially when they go out together, Nina and what's the other chick called?
Mila
Kunis.
What is her name?
Lily.
Okay. Lily.
Yeah. So when they go out, I mean, there'll be Sum 41 playing.
Yeah. Bit of Skater Boy. So they go out around here. What's her name? Winona Ryder. She calls Nina a slag, and that night, Winona Ryder's hit by a car, and she like gets her legs crushed off or something.
Yeah. Todd Thomas believes that she did it on purpose.
Yeah.
You know, that'd be annoying. Doing it on purpose just to make a point, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I hope you're happy. I got hit by a car. Oh, great. Good.
Yeah. You'll be sorry for you when you find out I'm dead. Yeah, then I'll win. Yeah. It's also around this point we start to get a lot of the sort of the trippier things start to come into it. So she takes some drugs, Mila Kunis, they go out for a night out and...
Yeah, so she sort of starts talking to Mila Kunis for the first time, who sort of tries to befriend her and sort of... And there's a few trippy things that happen here. I think there's a few times where she thinks she sees herself and then she starts noticing those scratch marks on her back.
Yeah.
She's sort of like on her shoulder.
A lot of things are like fingernails. Like there's one bit where she pulls like a hangnail and it pulls like right off. And I'm like, I bite my nails, so I get that all the time.
I properly Not did that. Make a noise. When she did that, I probably did go, "Aye!"
Some weird bits. There's some weird bits that are like horrific that are nowhere near as sort of grotesque as what we've seen in this podcast, but like have got me way more. There's one bit where like a physio is like working her over and she's like shoving her fingers under the ribs to sort of massage your lungs or something. Do you know what I mean? And then she like takes her foot and she's like popping and cracking her ankle and stuff.
Yeah.
It looks horrific.
Yeah, and I quite like the popping of bones and stuff. I find it quite relaxing, like the sound of it. You ever watch like people's backs getting cracked?
No, but it does sound like something I would enjoy.
It's pretty satisfying. Yeah. But having your lungs massaged, I'll draw the line at that.
Do you ever need my lungs? Me and my friend Matt, we used to do this. It probably looked kind of gay from the outside, but we used to hug each other really tight, and then you like lift the other person up, and the back would stretch, and you just get like a. Like, not quite as mechanical as that sounded.
I get you say this as if I'm going to go, well, that's weird. I get a friend of mine to do that to me every day. Where I'm sort of sat in an office most days.
Yeah.
I find if I'm like hunched over a bit, it really starts to like feel quite tight, like in the afternoon. Yeah. And I get him to do the same. From behind, usually, so probably even worse. Puts his arms around me.
In the toilets.
Squeezes topless. In the toilets with me going, hey! And he squeezes and lifts, and honestly, so satisfying.
So,
especially when his penis goes inside him.
It's a cat. Okay, so cat does the same thing, but she can't like pick me up. So I lie on the floor, and she kind of stands on my back.
Yeah.
You know what they call it, like a weird leg massage, but where the legs are doing the massage. You know, when it's sort of standing on your back like that. But she does that, and it feels like it might one day break something. But it's pleasurable on the way, But Seven Black Swan, they do that. Where do we get to?
It is weird. But yeah, just they're getting clear. Yeah, so basically, then she goes on a night out with Lily.
Yeah.
They go on the pool. They go looking for some dick or just some nice guys to hang out with.
Yeah, off to catch a dick or two.
So obviously Lily's a bit sort of like she's a fun loving. Sort of like chatting to these guys, and Nina's obviously she sees something in her, I guess, which is like, oh, she's not like me at all. She's great fun, but there's a weird bit where Lily puts some drugs in a drink, without telling Nina, but Nina sees her do it, but still drinks it.
Yeah, because she wants to escape for a couple of hours. Because she says, isn't she, it's a couple of hours at most, right? So they both know that she's taking the drugs.
That's weird. You'd still go, did you just put something in my drink? You still, part of me would be like, I still want to know what it is.
Yeah.
Or I go chugging it back. Could be anything. Could be a laxative.
Especially, you never know with this Mila Kunis. One day she's putting a pooey pants in a bag, and the other day she's popping pills. She's like the crazy. She's like the wild card person in the raunch comedy. You never know what she's going to do.
Oh, she turns up, and you're like, uh oh, what's she going to do next?
Yeah.
put an ecstasy in a drink. Haha, what a laugh.
So as they're dancing with Captain Bucky from Marvel's Avengers and some other dude, there's a lot like the dance floor stuff gets like really crazy. It starts flashing. So in Requiem for a Dream, I feel like this would be way more bombastic. It'd be way more in your face and there'd be more visual stuff happening. But it's a lot more subtle in Black Swan. But you still see, if you sort of pause every now and again, you can see her face is replicated on another dancer, but it's like Funhouse mirrored and kind of crazy.
Funhouse, a whole lot of fun, prizes to be won. Sorry.
And then there's the old, the old infamous Lesbo scene.
So basically Nina takes Lily home and her mum's like kicking off like, what have you been taking? What have you been drinking? You're an absolute disgrace. Yeah. And Nina's just like, oh, fuck you, man. She goes and it's a bit weird because Lily's body language in this is a bit weird. She's sort of like hiding behind Nina in a weird, little creepy way. And of course, then those two get it on. But while they're getting it on, Nina kind of like has a couple of visions where she looks down and sees herself.
Yeah.
Which must be off-putting, right?
I don't know.
If you look down and saw yourself, if you look down and saw yourself, would you be like, "Oh yeah, that's right, Luke Condor"? But and she's—I mean, Lily, her mum. Bearing in mind, her mum's awake and has just had a go at her.
Yeah.
The sexy noises that Nina's making are incredibly loud. I was a bit like, "Keep it down, love. Your mum's gonna be blushing in the next room."
Also, the door. She's put like a table leg or something in front of the door so it won't open all the way so mum can't get in, but she can still like get enough of the face in. What are you doing?
Well, she gets her face stuck. What are you doing in there? And then she realized she didn't want to see it. Oh god, oh no, oh fuck.
The cheeks are just sort of catching on the door.
Ow.
And then and then the next morning it's awkward.
Next morning, it's weird because she wakes up. So Nina wakes up the next morning, like late, says to her mum, "Why don't you wake me up, you bitch?" But then when she goes and gets there and they're sort of all prepping to practice the dance and stuff, Nina's like, says to Lily, "Why did you take off this morning?" And she's like, "What are you on about? When you stayed over last night?" She's like, "No, I didn't." So I'll be like, "Well, who modded me out then?"
Would you say it out loud like that? Would you use, then you need to get answers, I suppose. I need answers. Someone mocked me out.
And then obviously Lily's a bit like, oh my God, did you have a wet, what did she say? Like a wet lesy dream about me?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
A lesy wet dream. Oh, did you fantasize about me? Was I good? And then Nina just walks off like, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. That would be annoying, like thinking you got it on with someone and then realizing it was all in your head.
Yeah, it's just
your life, mate.
It's what I tell you, it's like when you wake up, you think you got ready for work and you haven't. Just exactly the same sort of feeling. Oh, fuck's sake. Oh.
Not fair. Fuck you, bastard.
So it's all getting a bit crazier. She's now convinced that Lily wants her role because she's now her alternate for the thing. So she feels pressure. And then she decides, okay, I'm going to go give all this makeup and stuff that I stole from Winona Ryder. I'm going to give it back to her in the hospital where she's staying. When she gets there, she gives it back, and Winona is like, what are you doing? He says, I understand what it's like for someone to try to sort of take your spot and stuff. And then Winona starts stabbing herself in the face with a nail file. It's really gruesome. But you see it go all the way into the cheek, and then Natalie Portman runs away. And then when she gets in the lift, she sees blood coming out of nowhere, and she realizes she's holding the nail file. It's a brilliant moment.
It is a brilliant moment. It doesn't really get followed up on, really, does it? We don't get like.
No, I think it's just there to just wind up the tension. Because at this point, we're in like coming towards the third act, and I think the Swan Lake music is starting to ramp up quite a lot as well. Because then she goes home, and she's having a big scrap with her mum. What happens? She like batters her mum's hand or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Smashes her mum's hand in the door and her hallucinations are sort of growing more and more extreme. So her legs do this horrible snap backwards into weird
reality. Snap back.
Weird birdie legs. and she falls and like passes out, and then the next morning like her mum's trying to stop her from leaving the house, and she needs to go and perform.
Yeah, she's like, she's already phoned up, and she says, it's okay, you don't have to go in. Most people will be like, oh, thanks, mum. Like, yeah, I don't want to go in, actually.
No, mum, I want to. This is a big break for me. And her mum's, so again, it sort of does seem like her mum's trying to...
Yeah, not...
Her back. Not forcibly hold her back, but almost like trying to do all these little things that could potentially, you know, knock her spirits a little bit.
But she gets up. So her mum sits on the door handle, and she sort of... Natalie grabs her mum's hand and squeezes because it's all like broken fingers or whatever. And then she gets, like, she's determined now to do it. She gets into the, there's performance night. She gets in, and then apparently Lily's already getting ready for the part. She's like, fuck that bitch. I'm here. It's like, The Apprentice, like everyone's sort of fighting for that sort of one thing for.
Exactly.
Gonna say Alan Partridge. What's his name? Anna Sugar.
Anna Sugar. Easy to get those two confused, obviously.
Yeah. But she gets ready. She does the first leg of the performance, first act. But she like buckles under the pressure and she slips off.
Yeah, she slips at one point, lands sort of like on her knees, and the guy she was dancing with sort of just says to her, "You shit!
You shit! You little shit!" And then she goes back to the dressing room, and then she has a little kerfuffle with Lily.
Yeah, so Lily's sort of like all dressed for the Black Swan, and she's doing her makeup, and she starts having a bit of a fight with her.
Yeah,
I'm obviously saying, you know, I'm the fucking Black Swan. Pushes her into the mirror sort of shatters, and when they're sort of fighting, she sort of, Nina sees herself again. So it looks like Lily one second, then she looks like Nina again, and then she ends up stabbing her with a shard of glass right in the old
abdomen.
Yeah. And when she stabs her, it's Lily again. So oh my god, it's Lily. So she drags Lily's body into like a shower.
Yeah, it's like the bathroom. At this point, she's pretty much made a full transformation to the Black Swan. Her eyes have gone. She keeps going, like making those sort of.
Yeah, I mean, her eyes are pretty messed up, and then obviously her skin starts getting flecked with this horrible sort of like, what would you say? It's like,
well, it's like goosebumps in it, but like the bird skin. Yeah,
bird skin. Yeah.
And then she goes out and does the second act of the performance as the Black Swan. And then she's like spinning around. It's amazing. There's one bit she looks in the camera, gets her eyes right in into the camera, into the screen. So she's like looking out at the computer. It's weird. Weird effect. And then she goes back in. And then
she goes back in and you go, oh, I don't know what to do with that.
And then imagine you'd cuckoo clock like that. And then went back in.
Hello.
And then she's spinning around, and then quite a cool magic realist sort of element to have, like the wings fluttering out more and more as she's spinning.
Yeah, and then there's this weird sort of like Black Swan monster-y thing that was from her dream and originally just like dancing with her as well.
Yeah.
That was pretty freaky, wasn't it?
And then she gets off the stage there, and everyone's like, "That was amazing! That was the fucking that!" Like everyone's like giving her 5-star.
That was so good.
Yeah,
she gives Thomas like a big old schnog,
and he's like coy. He becomes coy about it because he's like overly sexist. He's out-sexed him.
He's embarrassed. He's like, bloody hell, what's she doing that for?
Yeah.
I got a wife and kids.
He faints.
and his trousers fall down.
And then, so what happens? Oh, yeah, so she goes back into the dressing room and there's nobody there.
Yeah, there's nobody here. So I think initially she thinks she sees blood and sort of puts a towel down.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I think,
That's a really good towel.
No, and then somebody knocks on the door. She opens it. And it's Lily.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Lily saying, "Oh my god, that's so good. Well done. You've got to get back out there for whatever else we've still got going on." But so like the mirror's still broken. The fight hasn't happened, and she realizes that Lily's body isn't in there. And then she realizes that she stabbed herself.
Yeah.
He looks down and goes, "Oh,
what are the chances?
Well, awkward."
Yeah, but she doesn't. Any sane person would be like, "Guys, I can't go. I can't do the rest of the show.
I've bloody stabbed myself, haven't I?"
Yeah.
But obviously, she realizes that's even though she's done well up to this point.
Yeah.
You know, disappearing for the third act or the final act, where she's the White Swan again, it's probably not going to be very well received.
Yeah.
Especially with the reviews, they'd be like, "Oh, it's great," but then right at the end, the lead actress changed, the lead ballet dancer changed for some fucked up reason.
Yeah. So she does the final act, and it's note perfect. It's like it's even better than it was in a dream at the start of the film. She goes up the thing, up the stairs. She looks down to the Swan King. What's his name? Jeff Hardy.
Jeff Hardy. Everybody, essentially. Yeah, everybody sort of looking up at her.
And mother's in the audience. She looks at her.
Ta-ta. At this point, she's a bit bloody there.
No
one notices.
Yeah. That's good effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she falls sort of down, lands on this mattress.
Yeah.
Which is there to catch her. And everyone gathers around, like the whole cast. Thomas, Lily, everybody gathers around to sort of say congratulations, but then they realise she got a massive bloody gash in the middle of her stomach.
Everyone's like, that is the most amazing performance I've ever... Oh, bloody hell. Everyone's like, because he's given her entire life to this one performance. He said it was perfect, and then she fades away. And then you just imagine some guy walking out of the ballet going, yeah, it was all right, actually.
Yeah,
I might come again.
That's all right. Did that lead ballet dancer die at the end? Yeah, I think she did. Bloody hell. Mental, that is.
Yeah. Might tweet about it.
So Nina sort of like loses consciousness and the screen fades to white.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, man. Okay, so trivia. Are you ready?
And that's that.
That's that.
That is that.
Number one. Which breakfast item has appeared in more than one Aronofsky film?
Grapefruit.
Yes, the half a grapefruit in Requiem for a Dream. Sarah Goldfarb's on a diet. She has to eat half a grapefruit and a black coffee every day or something like that. So I think it was a bit of a nod because it's the exact same breakfast, visualized in the same way.
That's the Christian Bale diet, isn't it? Oh, no, wait. It was a black coffee, a tin of tuna, and an apple a day when he lost all the weight for the machinist.
I need to watch that again. I quite like that one.
Yeah.
That's another like this, like a sort of psychological. It would pair quite nicely with this.
Definitely.
Number two, Natalie Portman met her future husband on set of Black Swan. Can you guess which one he was?
Was he the dude she was dancing with? Is he the prince or something? The prince?
So choreographer Benjamin Millipede. The amount of set the film
Millipede.
he was the one who said when Vince Cassell's like, "Would you fuck her?" Huh? He's a Muppet at one point.
Would you fuck her? And he goes, he goes,
yeah.
And then she goes, "That's it, I'm marrying you."
Yeah. You got that correct. Well done. Number three. Yes. How many years did it take from script to screen? So the finishing of the script to the premiere of the film. We've got A, 10 years, B, 1 year, or three years.
Let's say 10 years. I can imagine this is something that Darren Aronofsky wrote a long time ago, or before.
Yeah, 10 years it took. It's also, this film and The Wrestler were originally the same script, and it was about a dancer and a wrestler, sort of romance or something, but he realised that the world of ballet and the world of dancing... I mean, wrestling were so big on their own that they couldn't be in the same film.
Yeah, that's true.
So, this one should be easy. I think we're all taking note. The infamous sex scene between Mila Kunis and Natalie Portman transpires at what minute mark? I'm sure you would have noted this down.
69.
Yeah, true. So you did note it down.
No.
He knew it. He didn't have to note it down.
I knew it. No, I didn't have to note it down.
And lastly, which classical composer composed the composition, the original? It's the Swan Lake.
I don't know. Don't know the answer to that one, mate. Come on.
Just guess one. You'll get it right. It's not Beethoven, but it's one of them types.
Mozart.
No.
Just guess it. You'll get it right. Jim Bob.
It was. I don't know this guy's first name, so potentially. Jim Bob Tchaikovsky. It was.
Oh, Tchaikovsky. Yeah. I bet I've already said that name as well.
Have you?
Oh, yeah. What an idiot. Yeah, I said that earlier. Bloody hell.
What were you going to do?
I didn't realize he was the composer. I thought maybe he was just like went, oh, bloody love a black swan, Swan Lake. Yeah.
Well, he did. But then he made the music. Well, he made the ballet. Yeah. So, need to rate the film.
Yeah, I rate this film fairly high. Yeah, I think
pretty good.
It's a good one. Like I've seen it. This is maybe like the third time I've seen it.
Mm.
I think I saw it around about the year it came out, yeah. And then once again a couple of years ago. And then it's definitely I do like these sort of like psychological thrillers. I think Aronofsky's really good.
I think
he's just really good, isn't he?
I think he's the best at them. Like, I mean, I just feel like whatever he's doing, this sort of psychological thriller horror thing, when he gets it right, I don't think it's much better.
Did you know Aronofsky was linked to play the director Batman film before Batman Begins became a thing?
I think he's done a good job, probably.
He was going to do Batman Year One. Frank Miller. I think that would have been awesome. I would have loved to have seen that, but you know, we got Black Swan instead.
I think if he just made these kind of films like Pie and Requiem for a Dream for the rest of his life, I'd be happy. Yeah. So what are you going to rate it?
What's he got on the horizon? Sorry.
Sorry, I had no idea.
Do we know what he's currently?
Well, I think Mother kind of took over his life for a little bit. Isn't that why him and the missus split up? Because he couldn't stop obsessing about the film.
Oh, no. No, I didn't know that. Oh, that's a sad tale, isn't it? Anyway, you know, we'll give him a little boost now by telling him how good this film is. I'll probably go for like a B+, I reckon. I don't know if I don't think I'd stray into A territory because it doesn't strike me as... I mean, it is a weird one to be on a horror list, isn't it, really? I know it's psychological horror thriller, but I don't think you would really talk about this in the same instance as a lot of horror films. But obviously, it does fit that bracket. It could have easily been marketed as a horror film. Easily.
Yeah, but it wasn't, was it? So
no. But I don't think... But again, would it have been a critical hit and
an Oscar? My days. His birthday is the same birthday as my birthday. That means we're kind of the same sort of...
You're the same soul.
You are the same soul, yeah.
February the 12th?
Yeah.
There we go. Wow.
Yeah, man, I mean,
I don't know what to do with that information.
Don't worry about it. There's nothing in IMDb on his upcoming Mother's the Last Thing. Yeah, I mean, so you're going for B+.
I'll go for a B+, yeah.
Mate, I'm going to go all the way up to an A. I was trying to think of like any sort of negative about this film. I really struggle to think of anything negative about this film. I kind of feel like it's pretty perfectly put together. Perfectly put together. You know,
it's pretty perfectly put together. Yeah, I mean, everything from the music, cinematography, performances, just everything is a very unsettling film, and I love a bit of unsettling. You know,
the last 40 minutes of the film, I don't think I looked away from the screen once. I was just like so in it, and that's kind of rare these days. I'm always getting a bit bored.
Someone, Luke, your tease on the blink.
Your tea's like popping and like exploding.
Your tea's like you spilt your tea all over your laptop.
It's going
like,
hot then cold. It's on the blink.
Screen. I don't take my eyes off the screen.
Yeah, but it's good, man. I'll go for an A, definitely.
Wow.
And next week, we're doing. I don't think we're doing numbers 97 because I think that's Candyman. We've already done Candyman.
So next week, what is going to be a good? Because it's going to be a good double bill, I think. Is we're going to do Suspiria, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what? We couldn't have timed it any better, really, to go from Black Swan to Suspiria. You'd say thematically similar in a lot of ways, right?
I think after this, we'll know what's the perfect pairing. Black Swan and The Machinist, or this and Black Suspiria. Swan.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Which one are you going to have in like a double course?
Yeah,
Black's one for starters, and I think Suspiria is like 2.5 hours long, so that can be a big old main course. But yeah, that Suspiria is probably like one of the only major releases from last year that I missed that I kind of felt a little bit gutted about.
There's something else as well that I remembered that everyone else was talking about that I've not seen. I don't know, I forgot. again.
Somewhere else. Yeah. You've forgotten about it forever now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's on the agenda. And new series of True Detective is out this week as well. So I'm going to have to give that a watch as well.
Yes.
I don't know what made me think of that.
I like the high pitched voice there. It's good. Next week's Suspiria then. This show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovacs Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rating and review on iTunes. And remember to hit subscribe. Thanks to my co-host Ben for being a right ballerina.
Right ballerina. Cheers, Luke, for being a right dirty ballerina 69ing.
Back popping.
That, but it's not all this film's about, right? That's all everyone talks about. Whenever you say Black Swan, people go,
oh, the bloody lesbians and that. And you go,
that's what Kat said when I went to put it on. She was like, Oh, yeah.
Watching that, are you? But will you wait till minute 69?
Yeah, everyone knows minute 69. Okay, cool. All right, dude. I'll talk to you in a bit.
Bye!
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.